To say my name is Khalid. I'm a compulsive reader and I'm grateful to be here. And why am I sharing about what it was like at 3 o'clock? Because at 3 o'clock, I also got a text about a friend who is in our fellowship, that he was being moved to hospice. And it reminded me that I made a commitment to go see him, today. And that was a very helpful text because it helped me to pause. It helped me to pray. And it helped me to, let my boss know that I was going to leave work early. Because work was in, Hollywood, and this person, is at a hospital in Northridge. And so, that was very, humbling experience, because that was me getting into action to do the things I couldn't do for myself, right? Like that level of discomfort or anxiety or what was going on, oftentimes it leads to food, right? I mean, that's been my experience in the past, right? When I'm uncomfortable in some form or fashion, I'm hungry. When I'm angry in some form or fashion, I'm hungry. Or when I'm bored in some form or fashion, I'm hungry. And the miracle of today in that experience at three that then turned into me leaving my office at like 4:30 was that I wasn't going to the food out of hunger. I went to the food because it was time to have my snack. And it was included as part of what my experience was going to look like in terms of being able to leave my office and get to visit this person. And I was also uncomfortable because I was tired, right? And so hungry, angry, lonely, tired, classic reasons for me to eat. Well, the truth of the matter is I eat because I like the effect produced when I eat. I like to volume eat. I like to eat sugary stuff. I want to be satiated. I want to know that I'm comforted. And I often don't feel like I'm comforted in the world. I feel like I'm an oddball, right? I'm an outsider. I don't belong. These are all the noises that I tell myself. But this is what happens in my mind, even though today, you know, I'm talking to you guys and, I'm 3 years and almost 8 months abstinent, from my last, relapse and, down from my top weight of 422 pounds. I'll show a picture super quickly of what life was like then. And can you guys see that? I don't know. Oh, maybe if I hit that. Yeah. So that was me at 422 pounds in 2021. And in that body, every day was a day that I wanted to live, but I was waiting to die. Every day was a day that I was, just to walk down the block. It was a struggle to breathe. Just to get up off my couch. There were times when I'd get off my couch and I'd pull a muscle, and have to end up in the hospital and then be pissed off because people at the hospital had caught feelings or weren't necessarily so helpful. In this body, using the restroom was a chore, right? I had to use a cane to properly clean myself. Not things that I'm proud of, but that's what my life was at 422 pounds. And the insanity of that is that I didn't come into OA at 422 pounds. I came into OA and just over 300 pounds, and I'll come back to that a little bit later. But to come back to today and the experience of going to visit this person and the discomfort that I was experiencing in this journey, you know, on the drive there, I was on the phone with a couple of fellows, and I was able to get some comfort just from hearing about what was going on in their lives. And then when I got to the parking lot, I was able to sit with the fact that I was exhausted and tired, and I was just going to sit there in my truck and say a prayer. And I ended up going to sleep for a bit, actually almost an hour. And that's not my normal MO, right? I'm not a normal napper. And then there was an opportunity to talk to a fellow who had actually had was also asleep at the time, and I got to share a little bit of my longer story with him. And what it brought was it brought a sense of peace, right? Like I'd just woken up, I had a conversation with another fellow, and I was in peace. I was at peace. And then I walked in and spent some time with this fellow who is you know, he's a fighter. And why I'm sharing about him is because he's such a gift to me, because in this journey of him dealing with life ending challenges, there were plenty of times when the nurses would bring him the wrong food and he wouldn't eat it because it was not part of his abstinence. And you know, that is humbling for me to see somebody have that level of willingness, that level of strength, that when they were in pain that was ravaging their entire bodies, and somebody was bringing them something that, you know, at one point in his life was a way to get relief, he didn't use it. He sat with the pain, and he sat with us and those that visited him. And that's a miracle of this program to me. And to have somebody be a beacon for me was made it easy for me to get there and go to see him for a few minutes. And seeing him for a few minutes changed my entire day. And that's the gift of this program. That's the gift of showing up and acknowledging what's going on in real time, not eating over it, but also doing what I need to do to take care of myself. Because I had a banana, that was one of my snacks, right? My abstinence, just to share with you guys, my abstinence is 3 meals and 2 snacks, right? And the 3 meals have to be on one plate, but and I don't eat foods today that rob me of freedom. And I don't engage in behaviors today that rob me of freedom. And it was such a gift to hear abstinence described that way, as something that was robbing me of freedom, as opposed to something that allows me to have freedom. Because me and my intellectual brain and my desire to want to do things on my own and all this other stuff, you know, I started this program doing red light, yellow light, green light. Well, you know, I treat a yellow light the way I do on a road, and usually I'm hitting the gas. So anytime I'm dealing with yellow light foods, it's usually on my way to the red light foods, right? And the process of showing up and having an experience that is different from the one that I think I'm going to have, it requires that I show up first and just admit that I'm a compulsive overeater. And it took me a while to fully admit that, you know. Before coming into the rooms, I was somebody that could manage my food, or at least that's what I thought, except I was eating because I wanted to hide. Except I was eating because I wasn't being seen. Except I was eating to not feel. And I was also eating to feel. And the way that I eat is different than my mother would eat, right? Like I tell this story a lot, but my mother, when she has a piece of carrot cake, it's her favorite thing. Well, it's really my dad's favorite thing, but it became a meal, a treat that we would have. When she has a piece of carrot cake, she has a bite of it, a couple bites of it, and then she puts it in the freezer. When I have a slice of carrot cake, I have the whole slice, and then I have another slice, and then when I finished all the carrot cake, then I'm going into the freezer, and I'm slicing her carrot cake without telling her. And then before I know it, I've eaten too much of her carrot cake, and now I'm just going to eat her carrot cake, and then I'm going to apologize and replace it and do all this other things. And at some point in that journey, I'm going to just stop apologizing. That's how I eat, right? That's how I got to eating a half gallon of ice cream in the course of a day, and my body reacting horribly to it. And then me waking up the next day wanting more ice cream, right? That's what it looks like for me. And so that experience and those experiences, when I first came into the rooms of OA, what you guys taught me was that was the physical manifestation of this allergy, right? It's what happens when you put one in, as you can say. I'm in the mothership program as well, but you know, that's what happens when I start to eat something that is that robs me of freedom. I want more, and the way I eat it is in a way that is completely outside the realm of normalcy when it comes to how other people seem to eat. And then when I want to stop, you know, I seem to be able to force myself to stop for a little bit of time. And then for whatever reason, I can't stay stopped. But then I have this ego that is constantly telling me that if I make a promise to myself that I'm never going to eat that again, and I'm never going to do that again. And then when I can't keep that promise, and then now I'm beating up myself over that fact. And all of a sudden, before I know it, my self-esteem's in the toilet. So I don't know if you're keeping track, but I basically eat because I like the effect produced by food, right? I eat because of how it makes me feel. I eat because of what it helps me to avoid. And then I eat because I can't stop eating. And it wasn't until I had the experience of not being able to stop eating that things changed for me. And so what did it take for that to happen? Well, what it took for me was to come into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, was to start working a program according to how you guys suggested that I work it, where I stay in the center of the herd, where I get a sponsor, where I follow that sponsor's direction, where I find out what my alcoholic foods are. At the time, it was red light, yellow light, green light, where I am of service at the meeting level, and where I work steps. And if I do those things, it was promised to me that I would have freedom. And so I did. I had freedom. It was 70 pounds down. I was on step six. And then I had a falling out with the sponsor, and the sponsor told me I did get a new sponsor. And what was my great idea? A cup of frozen yogurt. I deserve it. I've worked, you know, I've done this work. I have, me. And so that cup of frozen yogurt and me saying that I'll find a sponsor on Monday, well, that turned into me actually trying to kill myself with food in 2015 because I didn't get to Monday. I got to 110 pounds heavier in a year and a half. And then I was convinced that this program didn't work. I had taken step three back when I was abstinent at that time. And my sponsor at the time asked me to sit in a park and contemplate what that meant. What did it mean to want to hand over my life to a power greater than myself, to relieve me of the bondage of self, that I better do that I will? Well, I spent time first thinking about why am I sitting in this park, because the sponsor left me alone. So why am I here? But after I sat with it, I got present to this little boy inside of me that was kicking and screaming, and it's constantly saying, I don't wanna, or I wanna. And I got present to this little boy that just wanted to know if he was gonna be okay if I actually surrendered the food to a power that I can't define. And I couldn't answer that little boy at that time. I could only say, I don't know. And that boy was like, all right, well, it's on. And so, of course, at that point, I stopped going to as many meetings. At that point, I stopped working with other folks. At that point, you know, when this urge to just have the frozen yogurt came through, I had no defense. And so, of course, I was going to have the frozen yogurt. But what I didn't know, and I can tell you today for sure, is that I couldn't stop. Once I had the frozen yogurt, I had to keep going. And then it was, once the efforts came in, it was off to the races. And so why do I tell you guys that relapse story? Because there were several relapses after it. And there were multiple different ways that I've attempted the work of the program. I've done no sugar, no flour. I've done no grazing, no binging. I've done red light, yellow light, green light. And I've done sober eating, which is ultimately no unilateral food decisions. And I relapsed doing all of them. I didn't relapse when I was doing what the sponsors suggested in each one of those versions of the program. I was actually doing okay. But at some point, this thing up here told me that my way was going to be better, that you guys don't understand, that you guys don't understand what I'm going through. You guys don't understand what's happening. And so I have to do it my way. And at some point in that process, my way meant food. And I just told you how I eat. And so that, of course, is how the food shows up for me. And so in 2015, when I actually was trying to kill myself, and January 1st of 2016, when I woke up, I was like, well, now what? Well, my great idea was I don't need to be in these rooms at all because it's not working. Even though I was down 70 pounds, even though when I had worked other ways of working the program, I was down 50 pounds or I was down 30 pounds, or I just wasn't insane with the food. But I was convinced in that moment because it didn't look like the way I wanted to look like, because it didn't rob me of my shame. It didn't, I couldn't come in and be Mr. OA for all of you, right? So it didn't work as far as I was convinced. And so I left and was gone until 2019. But then when I came back, because I was in enough pain, I was able to hear a message in a way that I wasn't able to hear it before. And the message that I heard when I came back, and it didn't happen, and I didn't really hear it until I relapsed again. But what I heard was, if I treat this as though it's a top piece of business, if I treat this though as my life depends upon it, right, then abstinence is a gift, and it's a gift for me to hold on to. But I need help holding on to it. I need a power greater than myself to get abstinent, and I need a power greater than myself to hold on to it. And what you guys showed me was that if I come around a group of dieters, that's somebody had used that phrase. I usually use group of drunks, but a group of drunks, that's God, right? But I have to have the gift of desperation for me to even come around a group of dieters. But if I have the gift of desperation and I come around a group of dieters, then I can take good early direction. But I don't seem to be able to take good early direction on my own. I don't seem to be able to take good early direction unless my back is up against the wall. Why is that? I don't know. But all I can do is say that I accept that that's my reality for today. So today, when my life was unmanageable, when my thought life was unmanageable, when I was uncomfortable, I had to get into action. And the action I had to get into was, how do I connect with power? Power that I can't seem to access on my own. Well, it starts with the food. I had to make sure that my food was taken care of. I had to make sure that sober meal was something that I had. And once I had that, I had to then connect with other compulsive overeaters, because that was the only way that was able to get me on the road. That was the only way that I was able to see this man who is not going to be with us for very long. And that was the only way that I was able to do that, not make it about Kali. But it was also the only way that I was able to show up and be of service to somebody else. And I don't know why that works or how it works, but I can tell you that every time that I think that I'm going to solve this on my own, every time that I think that I have the answer, it's usually some version of me jumping in the truck, taking the wheel, and driving the truck into the wall. Right? But when I surrender that to the experience of what you guys showed me, right, which is that if I stay in the center of the herd, if I actually connect with power through working with a sponsor, but if I actually also work with other overeaters and share my experience with them, then I can have, thank you, Leah, I can have an experience that's different than the one that I think I'm going to have. And it's one in which, in the process of working the steps, I can recognize that working the steps is a way for me to get closer to my higher power. It's a way for me to get closer to all of you. And how do I get closer to all of you? By just letting you see me, warts and all. Right? Because I'm not perfect and I'm not meant to be perfect. And yet I am perfect the way a tree is perfect, right? A tree's got blemishes all over itself, right? But it's got these roots and they talk to each other. They talk to other trees underneath. And that's what this program looks like for me. I get to talk to other people who are sick people working towards being well. And in working with those people and talking to those people, they get to share their experiences with me, and it helps me stay sober. And then I get to share my experience with them and offer them an opportunity to stay sober. But guess what? They have their own higher power. I have my own higher power. This man that's on his final days has his own higher power, and I'm not it, right? And that's the biggest gift of all, because it helps me to stay humble to the fact that I'm not better than anyone. I'm not less than anyone. I'm just another compulsive overeater, and I'm just working to find a way where I can stay abstinent and sober. And the only way I seem to be able to do that is to surrender to the fact that I can't do this alone, that I need help, and that, but I have to take action when the help shows up. And so what does that look like for me in the last 16 seconds of my time? It looks like two-way prayer that I do daily or almost daily with a fellow. It looks like showing up and being of service and being a sponsor to someone else. But it also looks like showing up and being a sponsee, right? Because that relationship is a two-way street. Right. And so if I do that and stay connected, then I have a chance, like I did today so far, to have a difficult day and not eat over it. Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much, Callie. Let's give our speaker, Callie, a big round of applause for a wonderful share. Now it's time to ask our speaker questions. As we are still recording, we ask that you put your questions in the chat and I will read them aloud. You're welcome to message them to me directly or to the group. We ask that you do not come off mute to ask your question or to thank the speaker verbally in this section, as we don't have permission to record other attendees. We will allow up to 15 minutes for questions for our speaker, after which time we will have sharing until 15 minutes after the hour and then into our parking lot. So the first question we have that came in, or it's kind of a two-part question, Callie. How do you know when you're spiritually fit and when you're not spiritually fit?
For me, it's all about the actions that I'm doing. If I'm not doing what's described in this program, then any idea that I'm spiritually fit is just my ego and my pride, right? Because if I have this thing to the degree that it was described to me in this program, which means that food is a power beyond mind and body control, right? That I need an act of providence to come in and relieve me of the urge to eat, right? To relieve me of the urge to want to do it on my own. I need an act of providence. Well, if I need an act of providence, then I've got to stay in action to connect with that act of providence. And so what any semblance of spiritual fitness looks like is, am I at peace, or am I trying to control? Someone shared at another meeting, and I related to it, was love. The opposite of love is control, right? For the addict. And so love to me is, I don't have to fight anything. I don't have to force anything. I just have to show up and tell you guys what's going on. And then I need to listen to what you guys share with me. And then I have to get into action. But I don't have to force anything to do any of that. But when I do that, I seem to get relief. I seem to have an experience where I'm not trying to change the world. I'm actually just in the world, and in that space, I'm much more aware of when I'm disquieted, and I can then, in that moment, do a spot check, right? 10 step. I got to do a spot check. That's part of my spiritual conditioning. In the moment, can I, in the moment, pause and ask my higher power for help, and then immediately make an amends where I need to, and then immediately turn towards how I can be of service and helpful to someone else? But then, how do I start the day? Because I wake up with this mind every day. But I also go to sleep with this mind every day. So I've got to start the day by starting my program of recovery, by talking to a higher power, by connecting, by reading something spiritual. And then I've got to also end my day that way. But through the course of the day, I also need what people have said, God in skin, right? So I need to be connected to other people that understand how my mind thinks. And when I stay connected in that way, I'm dealing with relief and release and food neutrality, and I'm not trying to force or change anything. But when I don't do it that way, suddenly I want a second snack fast, right after I've had my meal. Or suddenly I want to isolate and avoid and not be around people. So to me, the latter is me not in some semblance of fit spiritual conditioning. The former is, I'm always striving towards working towards being with, and when I do that, I don't have to suffer. And that's what it looked like for me this afternoon. Whereas this morning, I was not in fit spiritual condition. And the last thing I'll say about it is, it says in How It Works, it is cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for me. Well, that's my thinking, right? But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. I just described three different ways that you can find, that I can find God, right? But then I have to do it in the now. So it means I need to do it in this moment, not tomorrow or not yesterday or anything, just in this moment. And in this moment, there's nothing wrong. I'm just here with all of you. Hopefully that answers the question for you.
How do you do a spot check or 10 step?
In the moment when I'm becoming, because I can't do it unless I have awareness, right? And so when I become aware, and sometimes it takes me 2 or 3 hours to become aware, and if I'm not careful, sometimes it'll take me a day or two to become aware. But when I become aware, in that moment, can I just pause and ask for help? And I can ask for help in a million different ways. I can say the Serenity Prayer, or I can just say, I'm out of sorts. Can you help? Sometimes pausing just means, can I just pause and just take a breath? Because guess what? I'm not in charge of my breathing, but I can affect my breathing. I can stop my breathing. But the fact that I'm not in charge of my breathing tells me that just in my own body, there's a power that's greater than me helping me breathe. Right. And so if I could just even connect with that, that helps me to set aside and separate myself from what this is doing, because this is always doing something, but it's my over-identification with this that turns it into how do I then find ease and comfort. And so a 10th step is just in the moment when I have awareness, how do I pause? How do I ask for help? And then how do I immediately turn towards and look towards how I can be of service to someone else? And sometimes that just means showing up at a meeting, but also sometimes it means just doing my job and being of service in that way.
Do you just have red and green foods and no yellow?
Well, today, no, I actually do what's no unilateral decisions, right? And so today, what I actually do is I actually am working towards, because I'm down 186 pounds. And so what my sponsor has identified today, and which is a miracle in itself, because I was convinced I would never do this, but I weigh and measure a lot of my foods. I have 3 meals and 3 snacks a day, and I don't eat foods that rob me of freedom. I don't do red light, yellow light, green light foods anymore because, again, like I said about the yellow lights, I hit the gas and I'm off to the races. And the biggest thing for me about no unilateral decisions is I have to be in consultation with someone else about my food because I can't see the true from the false. I need somebody's help to help me see the true from the false. And for whatever reason, living in consultation, taking pictures of my food and sending it to someone, committing foods that I'm going to have to someone else, making changes to my food, right? Those are all things that helped me to have an experience that was different than the one that I thought I was going to have just doing that one meal at a time, right? At the beginning, I discovered how much of a liar I was just taking pictures of my food. I'd be taking it from these angles, or I'd be trying to find a way to use an old picture, right? Because I didn't want you to see what I was eating. But it helped me to see what I was eating. And then that process continued. And all of a sudden, when I was told that the way to do this is if there were any changes to my food or if there were any urges to eat, I had to connect with another compulsive reader. When I started doing that, I started to have the experience of, oh, wait a minute. I don't have to, if I fire myself from the decision-making process, and if I put that in someone else's hands, this whole thing gets a whole lot easier for me. And so that's how I work it today. But like I said, I've worked all these different forms and they all worked, but they only worked when I was in consultation, when I stayed in consultation with the person that I had asked for help. Because there's some version of me that is still always trying to do it my way. And anytime I'm trying to do it my way, I'm usually in danger of of making a unilateral decision, which puts me in danger of stepping into a ring with a bear. And if I step into a ring with a bear, which means if I eat something that is alcoholic for me, the fight's not over till the bear's done. And I've discovered that 5 different times. I've gained 110 pounds in program. And I've also gained 120 pounds in program. And so just for today, if I just surrender to the idea that I can't be the answer, that I need help, and if I live in consultation with that help, I seem to be able to get through the day with just 3 meals and 2 snacks.
What do you do when you're wanting to turn to the food?
When I notice it, I immediately make a call. Sometimes so I'll share with you guys one quick story. I was in a meeting in a different program, and as you may understand, in those other programs, food is a big part of the program. And so they brought carrot cake, consequently enough, into this meeting, and it was 6 o'clock in the morning, and they brought it as like a breakfast, like a thing. And so I was convinced, I was aware, that's not my food. I'm good. I'm going to be fine, right? And then as I'm sitting there, and then this meeting's going on, I start smelling the icing. Now the cake's nowhere near me, but I'm smelling the icing. And now I can't be present because I can't hear anything because all I can think about is, why am I smelling the icing? What's wrong with me? How come I'm thinking about the icing? Well, I just want a piece of carrot cake. If I just have a piece of carrot cake, will anybody know? Well, nobody in OA will know, but people in this program might. all that noise. And immediately when I became aware of it, I took my phone, put it under the table, and I sent a text. And all in the text was, I said, was carrot cake is not my food. It's here and I can't stop thinking about it. And then I put the, and I said, I'm not having the carrot cake today. And I put the phone down. For whatever reason, the moment I did that, I was present again. I was able to hear the other shares. I was actually able to hear what was going on in the meeting again. And the miracle that happened for me at the end of that process was when I picked up the phone at the end of the meeting, the response that I got back from the fellow that shared it with me was maybe tomorrow, not today. Right. And that is a huge bonus to that experience because any semblance of maybe carrot cake might be helpful went away even further when I got that response.
What character defects has God removed from you?
The character defect of hiding, of isolating, and it only gets removed according to my spiritual conditioning in the day that I'm in. Even just having awareness, an awareness of what I'm up against, right? I'm somebody, one of my character challenges is that I want to be liked, right? I want you all to think of me a certain way. But do I have the courage to ask you what you think of me? No, but I have the courage to make up a story about what you think of me. And then I'm gonna mull and end up in a space where I'm totally out of sorts with that, right? So just me connecting to a higher power, me letting go of the idea that I can do this alone or I can do this by myself. That's another character defect that has been removed from me, one action at a time. But it's only based on the actions that I take in the now, because any of those character defects, they've been with me a lot longer than I have been working this program. And so it's not if they show up, it's when they show up, right? In step seven in the 12 and 12, it says without some degree of humility, every alcoholic will drink again. Well, that doesn't mean some alcoholics, that means every alcoholic. So I need to have the humility to accept that I am a compulsive overeater and that I am not in charge of my character defects. I ask, humbly ask my higher power to remove them, and I get into action when they're removed, but I also get into more action when they bubble up to the surface again.
How do you prepare yourself for your day?
When I'm in fit spiritual conditioning, I prepare myself for the day by starting the day with a prayer. And for me, I forget to pray all the time. So I have to set a time, I have to set an alarm. And but when I set the alarm, it's the third step prayer. I gotta do it. And usually I check in with the person who I do two-way prayer or somewhere early in the day and just work to get on a two-way prayer, right? And that includes reading something spiritual as part of that. But then also making my food for the day is also a spiritual action. Because for me, if I take the time to make my food and if I'm present with it, because one of my character challenges is I want to taste stuff. I want to constantly be popping stuff in my mouth as I'm preparing stuff, right? And that's not abstinent behavior. And so I have to be very present and very conscious about even making my food. And my sponsor used to call making food a spiritual action. And I started to really embrace that as being a spiritual action. And so today, this morning, even as I knew I was trying to get to a meeting, I knew I had to take care of myself. And so making my food was also an opportunity. It was like a walking prayer, if you want to call it that. But also knowing what I was going to have for lunch was a walking prayer, because guess what? Regardless of what problems I have in this world, if I know what my food is going to be, it's a lot easier for me to ask for help in those other areas. But if I don't know what my food is going to be, oh my gosh, my mind is insane. And I'm trying to figure it out. And anytime I'm insane and trying to figure it out, I'm that much closer to just listening to that lightning voice that comes in and says, eat now. But if I do those things that I just described, for whatever reason, that voice doesn't come in.
How did you find your sponsor, and do you have any recommendations?
I found my sponsor, quite honestly, because I did not want to work with this sponsor. I said a prayer. I had been in isolation. I had been in a state where, if there's anything about my story that I hopefully can impart with you guys, is the progressive nature of this disease, right? I walked in at 300 pounds to OA. I got to 422 pounds in OA, right? But also the progressive nature of the solution. And so for me, the progressive nature of the solution started, had to start with me coming into a meeting and being honest about what I didn't want to do, but do it at a meeting. And that process got me in enough pain where I started to ask my higher power, who should I ask to help me? And what my higher power said was he brought in a name. And I was like, no, not that name. I don't want anything to do with that person. And so I prayed again, hoping for a new name, except that name came back. And when I talked to that person said some things to me that was upsetting. But what I heard was, what I heard from him was that I have to treat this as a top piece of business. And he asked me if I was willing. And it was in that moment where, because I know we're almost out of time, in that moment, I was able to say the most honest thing that I've ever said, which is, I don't know. And I don't know is one of the most uncomfortable things for me to say. I want to know, or I need to know, or some version of that. But me saying I don't know gave him the opportunity to say, well, why don't you think about it for a few days and give me a call back? And it was in those 3 days in which I was eating at him, because that was my solution, that I actually experienced what it was like to not be able to stop eating. And it was in the end of that third day where I fell to my knees because I was going to get more food. After binging on food, I was on my way to get more food. And it was in that moment where I cried, I can't do this. And I raised the white flag and I just said, help.